Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Build Black Podcast.
So I found this audio. I was being interviewed by a maker of a card game. Her name is Linda. She's a wonderful, amazing black person. She's actually from Germany, and she got in touch ages ago. And then she owns a couple of Instagram pages, and she's featured me a couple times on the Instagram page. So she asked me if she could interview me for her card game. Her card game is called Debate Mate, and it's about questions that you can ask on dating to increase connection and get to know each other better. So she pulled out some cards and we went through them, and it was a great conversation. But then I just found the audio on my computer, which I was planning to basically record on my laptop for improved sound, and I just didn't turn it off, and we never used it. But now I want to use it so that you can hear this amazing game in action. And I thought it'd be great for you to have. So this is what it is. The sound quality isn't as amazing as maybe the intro, but there's so much food in these questions and answers. And so if you get the opportunity, do actually buy the game. It's called Debate Mate. I believe it's on Amazon. And yeah, it's a purple box. So if you get there and there's like 10 versions of it, it's the one with the purple box. So yeah, enjoy, listen. And there's her asking me questions and me answering, and there's me asking questions and her answering. Super interesting conversation. I thought, why not share it with the world?
Dope Black Podcast.
I picked a few questions that go along with your Dope Black Dad brand and the things you talk about.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
No, I'm ready.
Okay. And the things you talk about on social media and when you go on the shows and in general, you know, how you represent the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I'm going to start with like one light question.
Can I pick them though? I feel like they should be sprayed out.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. But okay, there's cool. Two questions that we're going to start off with.
Okay, cool.
In terms of like, you know, just warming up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That I have not much to do. Well, let's see. Okay, the first question I'm going to ask you, mm-hmm. which is in there, is how do you think others describe you?
I have no idea. I think it depends on the context of our relationship. I would say my team would say like fierce protector of them, very driven, manic, because I have like, there's so much going on at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that like friends would just say, I stopped asking.
Okay.
This is a really interesting thing. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know. I almost feel like at this point of my life, I'm just more, I know that I look after people within what I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And I create social contracts with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, I will say what the experience of being around me is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just go. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. So before I was a bit more like, let's have 360 feedback. Like, how are you feeling? And I felt like then you get people who don't really understand what you're about,
mm-hmm.
feedbacking to you from their perspective. And it's not, I felt like it just became a distraction from what I was just doing. Like, mm-hmm. what I'm doing is a service to people and to companies and to things. And to say like, what do you think of me, is different to ask me like, what do people think of like the work we're doing? Like I have more feedback in that regard. Like someone can sit there and say, the way we're doing the work could be better. I can listen to that. But like for me, I just know me at this point. And there is no other ultimate versions that are available to people. So I think in each social contract is almost like a service level agreement of like what I can do. And I can tell myself if I'm matching it or not. And if they're not, I'll be the first to tell them that it's not available to them and why.
Okay.
Which is a slightly different approach to maybe what your question was asking, but...
No, at all. Like, I think it's also very difficult to kind of like be like, how do you think others describe you? Because it's like, do you really go around asking people that? Like, I would love to do that more, but then sometimes you don't really ask. I do ask it, but you don't really ask your friends too much.
Yeah.
So it's not like something that you just walk around and be like, oh, how would you describe me? So you can just only guess and you don't really know. But I think what you said makes a lot of sense in terms of like also, you know, you said you're driven, you said manic, like like this is also why I also made sure like today when you said you freeze the day that I kind of like catch you because you're like catch me if you can kind of person. Yeah, you really travel a lot and I really wanted to grab that opportunity and be like, okay, let me just get up and quickly come and see you. Because you're like doing so many things, you're very driven and you have a lot of things going on and you're like grabbing the opportunities and you're creating like loads of things. And also, and not loads of things, that's such a bad way to articulate.
No, it's fine.
But you like, you know, have so many projects, you're into so many things, you're a creative and you are in your like prime of creating and connecting with people and creating content and
it's very inspiring. I think I'm thinking about it more, and I think the most succinct way to say it is that at this stage of my life and career, I have my own internal way of being accountable to like my behavior. So I don't look for the external validation in what my experience is day to day or how people experience me. I know when I'm not being my best self, like immediately. And I think somewhere between having like a therapist, medium, psychologists, coaches, people around me who are professionally enabled to hold me to account, those are the people that I speak to about my way of doing things. And I think generally just being able to get a sense of, is the mission progressing, being the actual answer to that question in addition to what I just said. So I think that's probably what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. I get what you mean. And I also feel like, yeah, you have like this like calm and collective, humble, but still confident about you. I mean, just, I think sometimes people, they're like, oh, you can't be humble and confident at the same time, but you can. And it's like a silver line, but it's like a fine line, you know? And I think you really represent that, like sometimes energy wise from what I pick up, it's like you're confident, you're very confident in your abilities and, you know, your life path, I'd say. But then at the same time, it comes like a calm stillness with a humble, calm stillness with it. And I think that's really nice energy. And it makes people around you, like you also say, feel secure. Because you kind of like, it seems like you know where you're going without having to be like, I know where I'm going, guys. You know?
Yeah.
So it just explains itself. And
yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's like a really good asset, you say, to have about yourself.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Thank you.
How would you say people describe me?
Or how do I observe you?
Yes, but don't be too soft. Like, I want to hear the truth.
I don't have there is no non-nice thing to say. Like, it's more, I always admire you have a drive as well. Like, I think to come into this country and settle and then like have a focal point. Like for me, creating the game, and I think I told you that we played this game with my family in Jamaica.
Yes.
And they were
in Jamaica?
Yeah. They were so complimentary about the idea of it. They just loved it. So we were playing that for like a whole day and it was a really nice afternoon. And also then you get to know your family in a different way. Because if I spoke to my cousins normally, we would go through, you know, all of our childhood, make up a whole bunch of stuff. But sometimes those questions just cut through the ice. So I'm a big advocate for them. Obviously, that's why we're doing the session now. And I told you about that. But I think to come here and build something and have a constant desire to build something for yourself, but also something that creates positivity, is for me just like tells me everything. And it doesn't necessarily even have to be the biggest selling game of all time. It's more about you seeing a gap and going in and trying to create mm-hmm. something. And that's something that I always think, like, I measure that more than whether someone's successful or not. Yes. So when I meet people, I try to figure out, like, what's their thing and what are they committed to. And I think if they're committed to improving the world in some way, I know that we would get in a good place, because that's a bigger mission than just, like, how you feel today. Like, yes. There's days I don't feel good, but because I know what I'm doing, I have to do it and I continue through the challenge.
Yeah.
So in many ways, that's my, like, understanding of how I've experienced you so far is through that lens.
Oh, thank you. Mm. Yeah, no, and I could definitely get what you mean. I mean, even though, you know, living in London and going through the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur, you do want to be successful. But at the other hand, it's like, I firstly think about how I can add value to society and mostly to my community. And I also know, like, that even the card game, like, it's something positive for sure, but there are some questions that spark very uncomfortable conversations, but nonetheless, they're crucial to have in many relationships, not just between man and woman and romantically, but friendships, family. Like, at the end of the day, is my social environment an environment that I can build with? And I feel like based on all the questions in there, you will figure out, you're gonna learn, you know, if these are people that you can build with, that you can see a future with, I mean, or come closer with, or even have a little bit of space. Cause I think, you know, mindset really matters, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate of that. Okay, that's cool.
Okay, perfect. So the next question that I feel like should be at the beginning, and then after, I'm going to let you, like, pick. Mm-hmm. And the question would be, what is your contribution to the progress of your people?
So I think I want to be very specific. What I have is two things, is vision and empathy. And I think the vision part is a way that I believe the world should be. So I have a clear sight of what that looks like. The empathy gives me the patience and capacity to do it. And then I think within the vision is like a strategic way of seeing things. So constantly looking at the world, seeing what the gaps are, and then finding an answer for them. And then living them with empathy. And so even if it's at cost of myself at times, I know the only way you can do this is with empathy. Like, you can't teach the inequality that occurs in blackness or in masculinity with a harsh line. Mm-hmm. Like, it's never gonna be just get off your ass and do something different, or, you know, just change to men and what their current challenges are. So I know I need to create empathy. I need to create new language around the experience of being black and being a man. And I think that is what inherently drives me. And I look, a lot of it is based on my personal experience. So it's a very personal tale that I speak of. And I've found the black experience, masculinity and neural normative really difficult to navigate. And so I've had to find answers. Some of them are bigger spiritual answers. Some of them are more practical day-to-day answers. But I'm aware that, like, my life, likeness, lived experience, skills and talents haven't just been easy to navigate. Like, you know, I am not the poster boy for ease. And so in that, I've had to ask real important questions, develop new skills, learn things about the world. And that's what I ultimately share. But I make sure I share it with empathy, not a hard stick.
And can you, like, maybe even, like, tell me, like, a story of an example of where you kind of, like, not realized your masculinity. I mean, you can't really realize that you embody that or not, but it has become like more of a conversation recently as well.
Mm.
And I think we all have like moments where I had moments where I was like delving into what femininity actually means and what it means for me and what it means for me as a black woman and what it means for me as a woman, as a millennial woman. And you know, I had like a few realizations and a few things that happened where I was realized like, hold on, I need to tap into my femininity.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had like similar experiences where you're like, okay, maybe there's an imbalance or something that the way you lived your life before, because you said before, like, your life wasn't a life that started off like with ease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something you kind of had to work towards to become this calm and collected, still humble, confident man. Can you tell me like a story of like a moment where
So the way I separate masculinity and femininity is I say masculine is doing, and I'll say femininity is being. And the doing part is really easy for men. So us having solutions that are practical are where our strong suit is. And I think some of the more traditional elements of masculinity, about protecting your family, providing, all those elements are so intuitive into my understanding that after about 30 odd years of doing that, what I realized I didn't have is the softer skills. And I think often, and this is more like intersectional, especially like black men growing up in the cities, our relationship with ourselves and our surroundings is so challenging at times that you do not get a chance to work on your softer skills.
Your feminine side.
Yeah, like, you know, the idea that you will just feel your feelings, like on an estate or something, is highly unlikely. Or feel your feelings when somebody racially abuses you, or feel your feelings when you get stopped and searched by police and not wanting to enact some sort of justice or repair yourself or make yourself feel better by any other means. So you're kind of, you learn to soothe yourself, and the methods of soothing yourself are normally at the cost of somebody else or even your own peace and value. And so I had to learn how to sit with myself. That was a really intentional thing. And I think, you know, I've faced all those experiences. And I think every man will tell you the first time he got rejected violently by a woman, like what that did to him, it changed him. It's like an alchemy. And you're not the same after that. And if you've had a challenging relationship with your mother, you're not the same after that. Your relationship with women starts there. And if you then get stopped and searched by the police 30 times, and if you go to school and they say you're going to go to jail and you're going to be nothing, and just constantly chipping away at your sense of self, by the time you're an adult, you have all those marks on you. And there is no collective way to heal that. There is no space to heal that. We can't, as men, we can't go to women and be like, heal us from our developmental years. It's not fair on them, but it's also just not going to happen. So we're having to learn that we can't just be these broken men in society, figuring it out, using people. And we've had to be more accountable. The hard part is that there's very little support, even in language or community, in us doing that work. It's kind of just do it, because the cost of us not doing it is so great. You're hurting children, you're hurting women, you're hurting elderly, you're hurting disabled people, you're homophobic, just like lots of very big ideas about what us at our least powerful can do to others, but then not the support that we need to then accelerate that. So there's going to be a period of like lots of wounded men just existing around us. And then I think the next generation will have a bit of an easy one. And I say generation, I'm talking 5 to 8 year gap between the next generation. So I'm almost hitting 40. And men of my generation had no capacity to do some of the things that men at 25 are now doing. I've just seen a group of men wearing pearls and handbags. And I'm like, that's so dope that we've evolved where like guys on an estate are also wearing pearls. Like that just wouldn't be possible. And it's just it's an evolution of a conversation, an expression, a way of being that is more acceptable than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. So time will be our friend. But for those men who are challenged now and in the mud of it, there's no cancellation hotel to put them in. So they exist amongst us and we need to find a way. So that's why I do a lot of the intentional work that I do with other men. It's just to remind them that they're not alone in this journey. We're all kind of in it.
It's a very interesting take, because I think within social media right now, and I guess also actually within the community as well, because I think social media is just a reflection of what people actually think. Maybe they won't say it like face to face, but they're thinking it, that's why they're commenting it. And you know, the thoughts are there, but I feel like there's such a divide between, and I have this question in there, and it's actually a question that says, should black men be encouraged to emotionally express themselves more? And I feel like when I wrote that question, it was a question where for me it's like, yeah, obviously. I mean, you have to be vulnerable. I feel like vulnerability and love is like one coin, and it's two sides to it. You know, if you want to open your heart to feel love and all the great things, you can't just be like, I'm just taking in the love and the vulnerability. I'm going to, you know, brush under the carpet. So you have to kind of be open for both. So what is your opinion? Because, sorry, just quickly. And then so many, but every time I post about it on the page, about men expressing themselves emotionally, be it towards the family, friends, or even like the romantic partners, there's so many men that are like, no way, you want to feminize the black man, talking about the pearls in the hand. It all kind of goes together automatically, even though I don't even think it has to automatically be like, okay, you talk about your feelings, handbag, you know, it's not like something that straight away connects. But generally, so many men saying, no, this is the worst, you can never open up to a woman, she'll hold it against you, and all these things. And I just feel like, so basically you're saying that men, and let's keep it within the community, black men are just not there. They were not made to be loved.
No,
that's what, but that's what it's giving when people like always talking about masculinity. It's like men are just not meant to be loved.
No,
it's just,
specifically, you know, black men were not made to be.
Yes.
They are tools of capitalism and profit, and their whole value system is based on how much they earn, how much they contribute to that ideology. And that's why men who might stay at home aren't centered in society, is because that's not a respected place to hold, especially in blackness. And we've created this like hyper masculinity in blackness, which is I have to be the strongest, smartest and richest black man at all times. And without that, I'm some sort of failure. And I think like we weren't made to be loved, and we haven't been created an environment, a culture where we can be loved. But I would say even more tellingly that when black men do communicate their feelings, I don't feel that there's an openness to that. Like the position of a man in family and society is, if he's not centered and powerful or feeling good, then what does that mean for everybody else? Like if you was to go to your female partner and say, this is how, or feminine energy, and say, this is how I'm feeling, and it's earth-shattering, then what does that mean for the feminine energy? Like, if I told you that I don't feel safe and I don't feel comfortable and I'm worried about my future and my mental health is not good and I physically don't feel my best self, I'm not in shape, then you don't feel safe now. Because you're like, oh, this is not just about empathy and being like, oh, that's, well, how can I help? It's like, well, whoa, wait, you've got all these things going on. What about us? What about me? What about the kids? What about what we've built? Like, what's going to happen to that? So immediately in you not feeling safe, how, not saying you specifically, but how can that person then turn around and be an ally to them? Because your self-interest is at risk. And so often in that dynamic, we create this space where men can't truly say what's happening for them. I felt like if many people heard what really men go through, men's head, the fear that they have, there'll be a real reckoning socially in terms of the position of men. But men know that it comes at a cost. It invites other men to attack and try to do things to you, like being vulnerable all the time. People try it on you. They feel like now you're like, you're not a man, so I can just do stuff to you. And then you find yourself in a dynamic where people are creating things for you to deal with on top of what you're dealing with. So many men don't advocate saying those things. Like, you have to understand that I grew up in an environment where every day you walked out of your house was a consideration that it was to be attacked or attacked. So a part of me knows how to deal with those scenarios, of course. But do I have to become the 16-year-old young Marvin to survive my adulthood? Like, I have children, I have employees, I have jobs. I can't afford to be 16-year-old Marvin with all of those responsibilities. But if I don't walk out with that armor on, people will dishonor you. Like, they don't see you as a person, they see you as someone to take things from. So it's like, it's that battle between how authentic and vulnerable can a man really be in this environment? Like, he doesn't have the privilege of, you know, the security and being protected by the government, law, and, you know, whatever policies and procedures that are being created to protect his, like, ability to self-express. So it is a bit of a minefield to navigate for black men.
So you do feel like, so do you feel like the black men should be encouraged to emotionally express themselves more?
Yes, but I think they should do that to other black men. They shouldn't invoke it externally. Like, I personally find a different level of conversation. We hold a men's group every month, and every time we hold that group, a man says something to me that makes me want to cry, that makes me have a really strong feeling, is he going to do something? Is he going to hug him? Because they're really going through it. But he can say that in the room with us because we all know what that is really like. But if he goes and says that in his home, he says that in front of his parents, they'll talk about how the olden days was tougher. If he goes and talks to, like, obviously you can't go talk to your children about that. If you go talk to your partner, that means something in terms of the house that you're building. So it's a place where you speak to your brothers. You need strong, healthy male, like, people that you're coexisting with. Like, trying to exist alone as a man is not healthy.
So when, tell me more about the group, like, that I can put maybe like a link or something like that.
Well, we don't really, like, for me, I don't really want to overly expose it. It's just a space that we have. And we do invite openly men to come and join that space. But it's not one of those things, like, we're oversubscribed as it is. Like, it's too full every single month, which is great. But it means that we need more intentional spaces for men to exist in. And it's clear that men don't have it. So yeah, it's something that I'm very, very present to. And obviously, like, we want men to come and seek help. But I think the WhatsApp group we created for Dope Black Dads is the perfect example. Not WhatsApp, sorry, the Facebook group is the perfect example, because you can go in there on a Facebook group, just type a message and be like, this is what I'm experiencing, I'm having trouble with X, Y, Z. And a group of men will just come and just answer the questions.
Oh, lovely.
So I think that's probably the healthiest thing to signpost, because I think it will benefit a lot of people.
I will add that, like,
somewhere.
Okay, well, I mean, for me as a woman, that's actually really, really sad to hear, because, I mean, I just feel like thinking about having a partner, you know, being with a black man in a relationship, I would love the idea that the same way he's there for me and can support me, remembering, like, my ex-boyfriend, that every time there was, like, something wrong with me, I wasn't stressing up something, I was upset about something, like, something was bothering me, I could always go to him and, like, he will make me feel better, like, he'll always find, like, and even till today we're still friends. If I'm really feeling down, I know I can call him and we have, like, 1 hour conversation, and after I feel better. And I think it's so sad, like, I'm actually really, really sad right now that I'm never gonna, like, that it's not something I can give back.
Well,
like, I would love the idea to be able to give it back. And I think men always talk about how they open up or they're being vulnerable, and then you kind of, like, hold it against them. And actually, there was a conversation with me and my ex-boyfriend as well, when I didn't feel like I held it against him. It's just, like, some things he told me about his childhood. And then one time we had, like, a disagreement, and then he said something, and I was like, without being shouty, and I didn't say it in a rude way, I was actually quite calm. I was like, and see, this is exactly, you know, what you said your parents did, and now we're repeating that. And it's not a good thing. And then he's like, you're holding it against me, but isn't that holding it against, that's not it, but can't you see that that's something that bothered you as a child, and now you're doing the same thing?
It's not your job to join those pieces together. And that's what
but
I mean.
But
by
why not? Because you, if he did that to me, I would be like, yeah, you know, you're actually right. And the funny thing is, now he realizes these things. But in the moment, it's like, sometimes I feel like you can swallow your ego a bit. It's not just every day, like, nobody can tell you anything. Like, sometimes, like, really listen and be like, you know what? You're actually right. Let me think about that. No, you just
First and foremost, you need to have capacity as a man to be able to hear that.
Yeah.
So there is still, timing is still an essence.
Yes.
Maybe not in a moment of a conflict do you bring up the thing regarding his childhood.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like, okay, let me go and reflect, and then tomorrow you'll be like, oh, another thing we discussed yesterday, do you think there's a link here? I think also it's just like, as a partner in a relationship, we all need to improve our language. We all need to improve the ways that we communicate and be able to say what we mean. Also understand boundaries, also understand timing. Like, my measurement of does it work is a real question to myself. If it didn't work, regardless of my intentions, something's wrong. So I could say that, yeah, I'm pointing out something to you, you should be accountable and take it in. But in reality, it didn't work. So either my timing was off, or my tone was off, or the content was off. And only you will know truthfully which one of those things it was. And it's okay to be like, I'm right, but I did it in the wrong way. And then come back and revisit it another time when it's less challenging. Like, we can't go around prodding around things clumsily, around things that have been shared with you that are challenging for people. And there's conversations that we've had, I just wouldn't bring it up in any summation of anything I experience in you in, because I don't know where you're at with that thing in that particular time to be able to say, well, I'm joining two dots for you and I'm showing you what it like. It's like, no, I wouldn't. I'll just keep that separate, because I feel when you told me that, it was something that was happening for you. Mm. And you're telling me because you want that information to be feel safe, but you also want to get it out of you. And you want to have a shared experience about what you're experiencing. I think that's dope, to be able to have someone you can share those really vulnerable, sensitive things with. I don't then need you to present it back to me in a bow and be like, this is why you're fucked up, or this is why your life isn't working.
Well, I did say like in the quiet, like, but yeah, I guess the best thing would have been to just...
It sounds like a timing thing.
Yeah, and then just talk about it another time, like when everything calmed down, also and be like, you know, let's just, like after the argument, when you made up, whatnot, we can be like, you know, when we spoke about this, actually it reminded me of XYZ, and I really think together we can work on that. Mm. That, you know, we don't repeat it, because I do
believe. Also, just like, it isn't even that, it's just like, do you think the link between these two things? And also, did you like affirm and be like, I love you? And like, this is something that really came up for me when you were talking yesterday.
Mm.
And it sounded really big for me. And I like, I hope you're okay, because you were not okay at that moment. And I want us to be okay. Like, I feel like sometimes the idea of affirming men and reassuring men is like a frowned upon thing to do. But all of us are trying to grow out of our child state. All of us.
Yeah.
And so the way you treat people sometimes is like, I'm in my child state and I need to be handled correctly. It isn't just to be like, well, you're a big person, you shouldn't be in your child state, so I'll talk to you like this. Like, the way sometimes I've seen men and women talk to each other is so mad and dishonorable.
Yeah.
It's like, you're basically just saying, I don't care about you anyway. And then that's when together, people feel unsafe. And then the first thing he's going to want to do is get justice off of how you made him feel. So even after that, I'm pretty sure there was another instances where he would just put his effort button on and was just like, all right, effort then. If you want to talk to me about those things, then I'll just chuck something at you for you to deal with, because I feel this way now. Or I'll go create something and spend time flirt with another woman to show you that, like, I can move on too. Like, it's just a very sensitive thing. And I think in those relationships, if you want them to work and that person in your life, you cannot engage in that way with information that they share. Like,
yeah, timing is a very important thing, and it's so funny, because actually I was talking to him about, you know, these social media things that have been going on recently about men setting boundaries with women, but even as well, and the way you do it as well, it's this guy who was with the surfer girl, did you get?
Oh, Jonah
yeah.
Hill.
Yeah, and then he was just writing this list of things she does and should not do if she wants to be with him. And he was sending it to me, and he was like, oh, you can't tell women anything. And the same way you said to me now, I said to him, you know, and then he explained it in a really calm, understanding way, like understandable way, like, you know, this is how it makes me feel as a man if a woman does X, Y, Z. We as men, we have an ego, there is pride, there are certain things that hurt me.
Mm.
You might not understand as a woman, because it's a bit, maybe feel like, maybe a little bit different, but this is how it makes me feel, and it would make me feel X, Y, Z if you continue doing that. Anyways, he explained it in such a way where I thought, if somebody comes and sits me down and explains it to me like that, it's a whole different conversation than a text with a A to Z list of my do's and don'ts.
Yeah, but so
I guess context.
So I think what's interesting about that is, firstly, Jonah Hill was incorrectly used his therapeutic language and now using it to oppress, which is different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that, I agree with the woman in that regard, and I think that's wrong of him to do that. I think him doing a show on Netflix, I don't know if you've seen it, he's got a show where he speaks to his therapist one-on-one. Definitely watch that, it's really, really good. And he speaks about some of the language that he's learned and how he approaches things. So I understand what he thinks he's doing, which is being clear about what the things are that he is uncomfortable with. But the point is that when your values don't align, there is an explanation of your perspective of the world and what you want, then you should sign an individual agreement verbally about what is uncomfortable with between the both of you and what a relationship looks like to both of us. If you both sign up from that point on and then you stray away from those values, then whoever strays away is at fault. irregardless of whatever has been then seen by people afterwards. So if she signed up to that not being okay and then it happens to be a thing, then he has a right to hold her to account. But what he can't do is tell her how to behave.
Yeah.
What he should then do is just remove himself from a space where your values don't align up. And I think that is where he went really wrong. Like, all the estimations, you can communicate them. You can say, well, why did you leave? And I'll be like, look, I don't think our values align. Here are some examples of our values not aligning. And it just doesn't work for me. It's not to say, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this, this makes you a slut, this makes you... That's like the stupidest...
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yes, and
But the person you spoke about, talking about men, we have our ego. Already, someone speaking in that way, and no dishonor to him, means that our values, my values around him wouldn't align. Because I can't speak to you from a place of my ego. My values are simpler and purer than that. And if they just don't align, just don't align. Like, the narrative that you put around it is there to manipulate somebody. To be like, well, I'm a good person, so I wouldn't take pictures with this person, do it in this way. And you're not a good person because, like, that's nonsense. Mm-hmm. Like, you, whatever you want to do is up to you, but does it align to my values? Yes or no, and I can say it doesn't, and I can give very simple reasons why, and I can move on. But telling you that you have to bend yourself to my values to be with me is not, it's just like the worst. And also, it doesn't last. People can't put an act on for that long. So at some point, it will come out. If she believes that's naturally right, then she will just do it whenever she wants or whenever you're not looking, which is worse. So just let it go.
Okay. All right, then. Makes sense. All right, then. Let's go. So now I'm going to put these questions.
So you
there.
Can see them. Okay.
Yeah.
This always goes slightly off center.
Yes.
Do I read them?
Oh.
Oh, yeah. My Lord. Finish the sentence. Black love is.
Oh, I. Black love is passionate.
Wow. Okay. Yes. You went practically. Yes. Huh? You went practical.
Why is it practical?
Passionate. Okay.
Well, I feel like that. Yes. Mm. I feel like it's just. It's something you can't even describe. It's also like more like passion. You can't really describe passion. It's just there and you feel it.
Mm.
And yeah.
Okay.
It's just like a whirlwind, but at the same time, not like one of these crazy ones, but it's just like we're passionate about each other. We're even beyond men and women. But even, well, I know lots of people talk about how the community, we don't help each other, this. But I think you're really passionate about each other. Growing up, in Austria, where there's mostly, like, in my school and everything, white people, and then spending my weekends with the African community, or coming home from work and being with my dad, and, you know, going to the African community parties in Austria and being in that community as a child, I can't, like, you can't compare the two, and the love and the togetherness and the sitting together and laughing together and, you know. Yeah, it's just more passionate. And then obviously romantically, it's also something completely else. I feel I've dated, can't put it in boxes, but I've dated African man, Caribbean man, I've dated Austrian man. Mm. And I just feel like it's like a whole different ballgame. Now, even with female friendships, it's different. Mm. We help each other more. We're like, you know, this whole, you know, doing each other's hair, making sure like, you know, we got each other, cooking for each other. Like, I'm not saying white people don't do that, but in all my friendship I always had within the white community, if you can call it like that, I haven't experienced it like that. And it's just more love, more passion, just more feeling to it. What do you feel?
I think my understanding is in transition. I think it is, bad love is intentional. I believe it starts with yourself. And I think it's one of the most radical forms of activism that you can display as a person, is to love yourself despite all of the things that tell you that you shouldn't. And then only when you do love yourself in a powerful way are you able to only transfer that into somebody else. I think things can accelerate that. I think things like having children can celebrate that. It accesses a form of understanding of love in a way that you probably wouldn't understand before. It shouldn't teach you how to love. I'm very wary of people having like emotional incest with their children and believing their children are the answer to their life mission goals, but it's another story. I just think they will teach you another capacity. I think you learn from your parents, you learn from your siblings, you learn from your community, you learn from your romantic partner, your platonic friends, what love is, and then your children are another form of that different type of love. But I think it all comes from the same place. And if your like heart is open, you can experience it in the most powerful way. I also think love has to be something that comes from like power and not fear. Like, I think fearful love won't be love for long. I think you can't control it. You have to accept it's like expanding like a cloud is. You can't mold it into a, like, this is my love pocket that I'm going to keep safe for myself. I think you can't control it. It's just an is. And I think lastly, it's a choice. That's all my thoughts around love.
Okay. So love is a choice and not a feeling.
Yes,
definitely. In general, or are you talking about mainly black love?
Universally, it is nothing to do with a feeling. It is 100% a choice.
Okay. All right then.
And then displaying love is the act of being loving in each scenario that you're in. And as you practice being loving in every scenario, it will create love for both, you know, the person and the subject.
Okay, perfect. Do you wanna? You can.
Let me shuffle because I feel like you've rehearsed.
No, I mean I haven't rehearsed nothing. I have a very cynical I would have probably had a better answer to the last question.
No, there's. Well, the answers were the answers, and they were all.
Yes, thank you. Okay, I choose this one. Oh my god. All right then. Well, I'm asking you that anyway. This is a good one. Yeah. How can the current school system be improved?
Look, I think the biggest thing is Ofsted is not a great framework to measure the quality of schools and education.
Okay.
I think they should separate children into their preferred learning method earlier.
Well, learning styles, like if you like visual or audio didactic, you call it, I think, okay,
And then manifest them while still keeping a certain level of other types of learning. So you should be able to obviously write, read, and the base level of knowledge, but it should be deprioritized over focusing on what your learning style is and the subjects that fall under that, or the styles of learning that fall underneath that a lot earlier. Look, it's underfunded, teachers aren't paid enough. There's very little incentive. I think homeschooling is rising. So there's lots of challenges in it, but I personally just feel the separation of the types of learning styles is the most essential. Because I think more children will navigate it. I think identifying neurodivergent children earlier and making an intentional difference in the way that they learn faster would also help a lot of people.
I love that. I've never ever thought about that, that you should separate children based on their learning styles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've been working with kids all my life, but I've never thought of that.
That's crazy. My son is top of the class in every single
subject. Okay, congratulations.
I think, yes, because I'm proud of that. But I also think that's great, but it would serve, it's clear indicated there's other people who are struggling in that system. Because my son is unique. He's a very, he's very much a perfectionist. He's very to the letter. So if you say something to him, he'll hold you to that word, which is a beautiful trait and we celebrate it, but it's not, he can't operate in free spaces.
Oh, he's not creative in a way.
No, I don't think he's creative, but it's not just that he's not creative. It's just his particular learning style means that when he is created, he needs structure to create in.
Yeah.
Which is different.
So he's not just going to be free flow.
He won't sit there and demand to draw, have a vision in his head and then bring it to life.
Yeah.
If you say to him, we're drawing this flower, who'll draw this flower? But if you say draw something, he will look around and not pick probably the best thing to draw for himself. And I think that's just a different way that people need to be taught. But when he does draw the flower, he will draw it incredibly well. But he can't just free draw anything of his own because his brain will be like, I don't know.
Any direction.
Whereas my daughter has a natural attachment to this. So I know she would draw this. If I gave her to draw anything in this room, she would draw this. And I know that. And that's because of what it represents, what it looks like, the textures of it will make her draw it. So she can learn in that environment of just like draw something. He needs to be told what to draw, but it doesn't make them any worse or better artists. So that makes sense. So I think it's about contextualizing the skill set and separating people on that basis, not just, you know, if she gets told to draw something she doesn't want to draw, she's not inspired, so she will draw it badly and quickly. and it won't give her the passion. So you have to know that so that she can be measured on the right metrics.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. I have nothing to say to that. I'm probably gonna, you know, that's food for thought for me, because I never thought of that whole learning style thing at all. I don't know how, because I think about children a lot, because obviously I work with children. And you know, thinking back of my childhood, and so I'm really shocked. And it's so simple, actually. It's actually such an obvious thing. I can't believe I never thought of that. I'll take that one home. Thank you. Some homework for me for the next few months. Oh, now you choose or I choose? You choose to ask me. Okay, perfect. Oh my God, I'm scared.
What is your definition of a good father?
Oh, I was talking about this the other day. I mean, for me personally, what's the most important thing also working with children is like somebody that's consciously present. I just see it so many times with the people I work with, or even in my personal life, it's just like there's no quality time. It's like, or it's the way where a nappy is full and it's not your job. It's everybody else's job, but not yours. And this like quality time spending, not being there, making sure the child doesn't hurt themselves, but sitting down, playing a conscious, a deep, intentional interest in your child. And it's something that doesn't just come like that. Either you got it or you're not. Like, I'm also not somebody to like blame anybody if they don't feel a certain way. But for me, like, it would be something, somebody who has a common interest with me, like I would as a mom probably, or I do in children anyways, to like really take time, get to know your child, and having that passion about that. To really like, you like, you know, all these things you know about your child. I working with children and seeing sometimes dads, even knowing that they don't even know these things, like deep insights about who your child is. And I think for me, the definition of a good father is somebody that takes time, but also wants to do it, not like forces himself. I must, because somebody that generally has them in them, that interest to spend quality time with the children and get to know their children for who they truly are. And I mean, apart from that, somebody that's also like, unfortunately, and I guess that's where it goes often wrong with people in their relationships, is like, for me, it obviously would also somebody be that loves me. But that doesn't that necessarily, that doesn't that necessarily.
Do you mean like loves their partner?
No, loves me in a sense where, no, loves me actually. Actually, before I was gonna say loves me in a romantic way, like nuclear family way.
Who's me though? Are you the child in this,
me,
or are you
loves
the,
I'm the partner, I'm the woman, the mother of your children. So it would be also, that would be very important. Now, as I said it, I realized it must not, it doesn't have to be like, In my perfect world, I have this like life where I'm with the love of my life, and we have children, and everything is like, you know what I mean. But even if that not is not the case, and we together, and then we break up throughout the years, it must still be somebody like that loves me, you know. Because
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
For example, with my ex-boyfriend, we're not together and it's fine and we're cool, but I know he loves me as a person, you know? So I think that's super important for me, but obviously that's going to be a choice that I'm going to make, at least try my best to make, to, you know, have children with somebody that I know that loves me for who I am and appreciates the mother I am or I will be. And then the difficult part is the whole provider part. I feel like having somebody who provides for my children doesn't make him a good dad. All the other things that I just mentioned makes him a good dad.
Not in isolation.
Yes, because I would never, if my partner doesn't have money to support us, but he's doing all the things, you're still a good dad. Other way around, it's not a good dad. Cool. You can provide and not be there for it. That's not good for me. For me, a good dad is somebody that really spends, that does all the other things. Even though, obviously, having financial support is important. But for me, that part is more important, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. What is your definition of a good dad?
Pretty similar, to be honest. I always say present, active, and loving. I think you have to be there, like, mentally you have to be in the room, as well as like physically being in the room, emotionally being in the room, spiritually being in the room with your children. I always talk about being in life with my children, and I try to visit them in their world as much as possible, which can sometimes be quite hard because our mental neurological sides are very different. And so,
what is that, neurological?
Well, I would say, like, my way of doing it is usually through play. So I play with them in a way that's like rough play, or like, or just mess around. That's a really good way to connect with them in life and their level, which is like being with them rather than instructing them to do things constantly. And then like things like puzzles and, you know, Monopoly. I teach my kids poker recently, they're into that. So those type of things I think I'm able to do with them, and that's when I'm being present. Active is being on, so that's like being in life with them, being in life with like what they need is the parental part. That's like me making sure I know, you know, does she have the supplies that she needs to do the things that she wants to do? What school trips does she have coming up this week? And does she need packed lunch, or is the school going to provide it? Those type of things, the day-to-day stuff, doctor appointments, that's like being active in their life. And usually that's a thing that the maternal energy does. And that's something that men need to be better at, which is like planning their days, weeks, months, their life. And then loving is just like patience. It's the like process of like going through the days with them and what your influence is on their day. So I'm trying to be loving regardless. If you fall over, you get lost, you get upset, whatever the emotional journey they're on, I try to be a stable rock with it. And I think that can be hard sometimes, but that's what my understanding of a good father is. I would say that the protecting, providing is just inherent.
Yes.
But I would also expand the understanding of protecting and providing, because that is broader than just money and like physical protection. Because, you know, I don't know who's living a Liam Neeson lifestyle where people are out to get your children. So how often are you physically protecting of them is just like not probably very much. So inherently it's like protecting them and the space and the home. And that's like what the energy you invite into your home, the people you invite into your home, all of those things matter. And then I would say providing is not just money, it's food, it's clothes, it's
the type of food as well.
Just like providing healthy things, providing information and knowledge in the house as well. So creating that is a part of being a good father. But I don't think you have to do it all to be a successful father, because a lot of that design and that need is significantly higher than probably what was needed 50 years ago, and very difficult to do. And I think it's about co-parenting, and a lot of that needs to be equitably shared between men and women, or the masculine and feminine. And it's very difficult to pair up without joint contribution that bleeds over between the masculine and feminine. You know, a partner can't be the only feminine energy in the house and in the room, and you need to be able to play different roles in parenting. And so I think, like, if your female partner who traditionally provides the maternal energy or the feminine energy is like out and you're with them by yourself, and someone falls over, is it just going to be get up? Or yeah. do you have to like change the way you would engage and be that different role at that time? You know, I think if you can't play around and dance with your masculine and feminine, I think you'll struggle to parent in this modern era. And I think you'll find yourself ostracized, not only from your family, but your children specifically.
Interesting, yeah. Okay, perfect. Thanks. All right, then. I think you take a card. No, am I? You.
I can't remember.
I pick one and ask
we're just,
you.
We're just going. Okay, yeah, cool.
I pick one, yes.
No, hold on. I feel like you're giving them to me. Even though we're running out very quickly. No.
What lesson did your parents teach you that you now know is wrong? Hashtag unlearn.
Yeah, so this is one of the ones that I answered with my actual mom in present. I can't really think of anything, to be honest. Like, I don't think there's anything that I need to unlearn. I think she gave me a lot of scope to find out answers on my own and then support me in my answers. I think it's just like she never really was able to teach me about how money works. So it's not to really unlearn it, but like I think when you're growing up without much surplus, there is a slight poverty mindset that you develop. And that's probably really reaching. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't like I had to unlearn it in a really violent way. It was just like I had to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I learned how to live with not very much. So I can wind my life down to like a very low cost way of existing, because I can cook myself, clean myself, repairing clothes and like recycling things and making money, hustle. That mentality is just in me. So, you know, if I ever had to reduce my cost of living, I could, and it wouldn't impact my happiness. So I think inherently I would like to wish I'd learned money better, but I wouldn't even put that as a charge against her. I think she delivered pretty much on the key fronts that got me here. So how about yourself?
My one is the feeling of being a nuisance. You say that in English?
Yeah.
Being useless?
Yeah.
I think I was born into like a family where I was the only child to a mom that didn't even want children.
Right,
and my dad was more like, I'm an African man. I wanted to have children. You want this? If not, then I'm going to go and sort that out myself. Like, you know, mom was like, no, I love you. Like, let's have children. And I think, yeah, being born into a family full of adults where I had like mom, dad, grandma, granddad, auntie, uncle, and it was all like, I'm the only child. It was always like, yes, everybody loves me, attention, like, oh, cute, you know, but at the same time it's like, don't touch this, you're breaking everything, you're messy, you know. So even though now as I'm working with kids, I realize, hold on, I was never messy or dirty or breaking everything or clumsy. I was a child. And I grew up with that feeling that everything I touch will break. I can't do anything. And I'm messy, I leave mess everywhere. And kind of like, usually the attributes of a young child that's exploring its world. But it's been so installed in me that I'm just like not really adding anything great to situations like that, that I grew up now with this like imposter, a little bit of a strong sense of imposter syndrome, thinking that everything I touch is just gonna break. Like, I don't wanna use this. It took me so long in my life to even like start using washing machines and stuff like that, because I just thought, oh, if I touch it, it will break.
Yeah.
And you know, to the point where now I'm like super like extra, and it left me to be like a really messy person throughout my early 20s even. Like, I just, even not tidying up, because everything was always tidied behind me. So yeah, just feeling like I'm a nuisance and I bring no value to situations, because now I realize I was just being a child. But my parents, my mom, she was very irritated by me just touching things, pulling things down, opening things, then breaking things, losing things. But that's just being a child. It has nothing to do. So yeah, I think now I'm unlearning that. And it's a process, it's not easy, because I really have that within me to think like that nothing I do adds value to any table. But yeah, I'm working on that. I'm also in therapy and you know, realizing that that also comes from a childhood. Like, and then my mom's still treating me like that as well to this day. And yeah, I'm unlearning that, yes.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's like, real things.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people don't realize that the realest things are the small from the outset, when you're looking outward, looking in, but the impact is huge. So then I think like it's a very real thing that you share. So thank you.
Yeah, so I think working with kids as well and seeing parents actually wanting their children to participate in like everyday tasks, so wanting the children to come to certain places with them, wanting them there. I was so shocked sometimes. I was like, what? That kid is allowed to come there and listen to an adult gathering, or, you know, not adult, but it's like, you know, I would have never been allowed to join my mom to certain things because she was just irritated by me. And yeah, or help with certain things. Oh, come on, get like a little chair, stand on it, help me do this, X, Y, Z. What? The best way I could help my mom is to just stay out the way. And it took me a long time as a nanny to realize, like, no, that's not normal. Like, you want kids to get that confidence of they can do for self and they can do for others and they can help. So, so yeah, anyways, yeah, that's it.
Can we just do a check, a tech check on everything still running?
Is this still running? I'm so scared.
Yeah, I think it is. Because the alarm is going up. Yeah, it is.
Yeah?
Oh, you have? Okay, cool. I just wanted to double check because there's nothing worse than getting this far and finding like something missing.
What I do check for is the light.
The light, because it keeps changing.
About it on this feature.
Cool. Well, then let's do, what did you say before to quiet and set? I can't remember the words you put. That's the quiet and set, but I get to know what to edit.
Quiet and set.
Take two. Oh. Okay. Interesting. Do I now? How does it work? You choose one for me. Okay.
I have a thing of going off center. Do you believe black men should be encouraged?
Oh, so we did that already.
Oh, we did that one already.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
cool.
Yes.
This side. What is your definition of good mother? Right on the other side of it.
Oh my god. I guess. Oh, that's so difficult. In general, I have all this talk for good. I can only speak based on like my mom, obviously. No, actually, no, I can speak for moms.
Ideologically.
Huh?
Ideologically,
I think a good mom is somebody who. I'm going to be like very biased with that. I'm not biased, but like I can only go from my experience and see things I kind of lacked from my mom and I see other moms doing where I'm just like, I feel like a good mom is somebody that really wants to be with their children and shows that and embodies that. I get that motherhood is not easy at all, but I really get that. But at the same time, it's like I see moms that find it very difficult as well. Like it's a difficult thing. You can't just sit there. I'm not a mom, so I can't really speak for that. You can't sit there. It's like, yeah, every mom has to want to spend every second of her day with her children. That's not the case usually, you know? But there's this fundamental feeling of a woman that wants to be with her children and be there for them and want the best for them and organize for them and do for them and, you know, include them. And then you can see there are women that just can't stand the presence of their children. And I know that feeling from people I work with. I find it shocking. And I know that feeling from having a mother like that. So I think a good mom is just somebody who really wants to be with the children and, you know, puts a conscious effort into, you know, giving them her best, whatever that may be. But also for me, obviously the quality time part, the teaching them, the, you know, organizing the household, you know, but yeah, organizing the household. I mean, whatever fits in that role that kind of like balances out with what the man does in the house as well. But yeah, it would definitely also be the spending the quality time and wanting to be there and, you know, nurturing them and patience. You know, I think patience is a very big part. I think patience is the biggest love, proof of love you can give your children. Having patience and having that extra patience, maybe even as a mom, where I think with dads it's more like the discipline part is also very important. Yeah, and I think being like soft, like for me it would be like soft, finding that extra patience and, you know, really putting like quality effort into the children, be it educational, providing educationally, emotionally, intellectually. So yeah,
Why do you think there was a big difference between how you responded to fatherhood, to motherhood?
Because I kind of feel like I had a good dad, but I didn't have a good mom.
Interesting.
So okay. Yeah. So I feel like it was very easy for me to kind of like say what I would like from...
Father.
Yeah, because I kind of had dad.
Mm. So do you feel like you had a good dad, full stop? Or do you have a good dad based on the context of that you lived in, he was around you in?
Yeah, I think the second one. I mean, Nobody's perfect. But as a dad, I know maybe as a partner to my mom is another story, but as a dad, he was a really good dad.
Mm.
And he was like, you know, gave me the feeling like he wanted me there. I mean, he was strict, African dad, discipline and stuff. But I think he did, yeah. So I think it was more easy for me to describe that one. And with mom, was a bit like, I just wanted you to not despise my presence kind of thing. Like, I'm already happy with that.
Mm.
So yeah, what about you? What do you expect?
I always think about the collaborative element of it. I really do not see the roles as linear, independent roles.
Mm.
I think it's literally as simple as saying a dad is a male parent and a mother is a female parent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that there should be, in terms of actually the act of parenting, obviously creation is different.
Mm-hmm.
Once the child is here, there needs to be a demarcation of roles and commitment and support that both give based on who they are.
Yeah.
So inherently there is this thing of like, especially in the early years, I would say the primary parent being the mother makes logical sense, but it doesn't have to be the only way. I think that's because of what's required, like things like breastfeeding, if that's the choice that you make. Primary care does normally come from the mother, but it shouldn't be in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a huge differentiator between what a mother and a father should play, especially after five. It kind of is just a tandem effect. And I think finding a pattern of how you co-parent is the goal.
Like, who does what best? This is what you do.
Yeah, it's literally,
you know?
That. Who does it best? Yeah, like, doing bedtime is based on who can get them down best. That doesn't mean that the other parent shouldn't ever try or ever do it.
Yeah.
But if one parent, that's their strong point, that's the point. You got to get them to bed. Like, it's just a gift.
Who can do dinner better?
If you just better at preparing food, a balanced meal, obviously the other person shouldn't just down tools and be like, I'm not good at it. They should make an effort, but who leads matters. And I think
it's in which department.
Yeah, and I think identifying who's best and making the other person better is the mission. But who leads and setting pace, but also who helps the other person figure it out. So like putting children to bed can be difficult because men and dads have found it easier just to be like, go to bed. Like my method is go to bed. And then they just like unpack and go in the shower and they go to bed.
What? How old are they?
5 minutes, 5 and 7.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like I've cultivated that though. As in like, that's a very intentional thing that I wanted is, yeah, go to bed.
And what, just listen?
Yeah.
What?
There's like, at best you might get a like, oh, it's not. And then, but they go and do it. There's no delay in doing it. There's no,
what?
I'm not doing it. Well, like, but then I understand that I've cultivated that and that's something that fits into my personality type, which is I'm okay to detach at 7:30 and be like, it's bedtime. Whereas I would say like their mother might find it difficult in different ways at different
times.
And
then they won't just not listen. They'll just be like,
well, I think they just feel like they can negotiate more because that's her personality type. But at the same time, when they fall over, they will walk past me to go to her. So we understand our roles and it's never good or bad, better or worse. It's just we are different at different things. And if I really need to get them to bed, it's better that she even calls me about it. And I'll say, kids go to bed.
So hold on, but what do you do if they just be like, nah, I don't want to?
It would be what I do to them.
No, but yeah, not to them, but what is your method if they just be like, no,
well,
I don't
me,
want to?
Well, for me, I think it's about
I'm tone. Not tired.
No, but it's tone and intention. But I also feel like it's not impossible for them to push back. Like sometimes, like in the summer, I'm telling them to go to bed at 7:30. It's bright outside. It looks like this.
I used to hate that.
Exactly. And I know that.
Yeah.
And so I'll make an estimation based on the day of the week. If it's Friday, and Saturday, they can stay up as long as they want. They can literally go to bed at 2 a.m. if they can stay up. But they can't. So I know they won't. But they, in their mind, I'm like, we get to stay up until midnight. But by 9-10 o'clock, they're like yawning and passing out in the sofa because we, you know, make sure they have very full days. So, you know, that's a part of the balance slash illusion of it all. Like, it's just, I'm not irrational with my discipline. It comes from a structure, but also I communicate it as it's time to rest, not bed. Like, it's resting time. You know, I'm not dismissing you from us. I'm saying you have to go recharge because tomorrow's coming. And we've got this to do.
Yeah.
So I think it's like framing, it's communication, it's language. But, you know, I'm not against them saying no, or I don't want to, or dad, can we stay up longer? It's just, it's always communicated and we'll discuss it. And if it's just not possible, I'll tell them why. Like this weekend on Saturday, he had to go to bed on time because he had football Friday night, because on fair football on Saturday morning. And if you're going to go football and play well, you have to be rested. So go to bed tonight, but it's Saturday night, stay up as long as you want, enjoy yourself. And then, yeah, you can go whenever you want. That's the balance of the conversation. It's not just like go to bed.
Yeah, you've got really well-raised children as well.
And there's a long way to go, so let's just see. I tell you, the first thing is like, even me as a dad, like, every time I communicate my approaches to parenting, my values around parenting, or the examples of parenting, I'm very aware that I don't want to try and create an advert. It's not always transferable to any child.
No.
And this is something that I've cultivated from the beginning. And there are lots of caveats and rules that I am in tune with that you can't just say to people. But also, I'm not interested in being like a parenting advert for people. Like, look at me and my mindful parent. Like, I just don't want to.
Yeah, just,
it's so personal, so specific, and so sensitive that, you know, I don't really want to put a target on my children's back to being perfect. They are good children. I'm incredibly proud of them. And I feel like I have a hang of what I want to do with them at every single stage. But also when they go into teenagers, it's a whole area. I have no idea. Let me not speak up. And then it's So I'm very open to just like being wrong on it. And I'm taking my time with it.
Yeah, I obviously know, because I mean, I don't even have kids, so I don't even know. But I obviously working with kids, especially with the kids, like, you know, these rich kids in the areas here in London that are raised by nannies, they obviously have, I'm not going to put that one in, but they obviously have like this very dysfunctional patterns. So that's all I worked with. That's all the kids I've worked with. Their parents are not really spending time, not really interested like that. Or they give them some crazy amount of pressure to sit certain exams with a very young age and don't spend quality time with the children, really, you know, because everybody's working. And then obviously those kind of kids have a whole different pattern of behavior. So when I heard this about telling a child to go to bed and they straight away be like, okay, it's just mind blowing. But obviously I didn't work with functional families.
I hear that.
Yeah, so it's a different kind of like, yeah. Okay, who's taking the card now?
I can't remember. But it's fine, you can do it. I'll take one.
Okay.
What can we do to protect and or better our mental health as a people? Collective Black mental health. What can we do to protect it?
I think in general is something is about focusing inwards more than outwards. I can only notice with myself, you know, when you live in the outside and you're always thinking about what you have to have and what you have to do and what you have to be, that you're not at the moment to be worthy of love and respect, you're always going to get lost. Once you focus the inwards and think, what do I have? Who am I? What do I have? And what do I represent for myself? And how can I add, like, you know, circulate that within to add value to society? I think it's a bit of a different conversation in terms of like mental health. So yeah, I do that personally. Like, you know, you can get really lost in, I don't have X, Y, Z, and I'm not like this and this person. And, you know, the world sees me like that, and that's why I will never. I can get easily lost in that. And I do sometimes, but every time I go within and I just really, you know, focus on just feeling good. And it sounds so bad, not in a way it's like, oh, I'm gonna get myself a coffee or I'm gonna book a holiday. Even that can be it as well, but just like focusing on like who I really am and what I believe like my purpose is in life beyond all this material stuff. And how I can use my gifts or my passion to really like how you say, self-realization, you know, and to kind of embody that and bring that out and then add value through that, I think that's when I feel better. That's when my mental health improves. And sometimes I slip into the other side, and then I you know, go through very depressive stages of my life. But every time I go inwards again and focus on what I can do to, you know, how I can use my myself to inspire and also to add value, but not on a standpoint of like, I need everybody to see that, but I just want to embody that. So I think it's about going inwards rather than outwards, not being too concerned about what the world kind of thinks. But I think maybe that's easier said than done from my point. But yeah, what do you think?
I think you have to identify what your belief system is. Is it capitalism? Is it spiritual ed? Is it existentialism, Buddhism, Christianity? Those things, I think, guide your ways of being in a way. And then I think you have to find a way to decolonize your ways of thinking. If identity matters, if blackness matters to you specifically, it's one of your primary ways that you identify. I'm not sure if you can be as connected to some of those other religions that were designed with us in mind. And so we have to find our own form of spirituality if we want that true happiness and healthy well-being mentally. And it's a real process. Like, if you ever look into the concept of like decolonizing your life, it's wild.
I have a few questions about that in there actually as well.
Well, like, it's weird because I realized, and somebody who brought it up to me, she actually passed away now, and she brought it up to me, and she refused to explain it to me. And I didn't understand why.
Decolonizing your mind?
Yes.
Okay.
And she refused to explain it because the way my mind is, if you tell me, I can understand it, process it, add to it, go and research it and build an idea of what it is. And she refused to. And I was like, well, that's a bit weird. Then I went away and looked at it. Then I understood why.
Why did she not explain it to you?
Well, I will say again, I wouldn't explain to you why I wouldn't explain it to you. I think if it's the concept, the sentence lands with you in some way, go and investigate what that means. Because I think you have to take into account how somebody already is living. And I can't, it's not a teaching. It's a journey of your own that you go off and ask questions about how you're living and what ways of living are damaging you versus helping you. And I think spirituality is a massive thing.
For sure.
And us being connected to particular belief systems are really problematic for blackness. Trying to be a community in that particular is impossible. So you have to attach yourself to new ideas. So really, when I meet somebody, it's not like whether I like you, it's whether our values are right. Because that's the fruit of the tree, isn't it? Like, I can tell you if I like you because you might be fun and you might speak to a particular part of me that I enjoy. But really, for us to coexist in a deeper, meaningful way, I need to know your value system. And you're more likely to find alignment in that way than you are through anything else that you're consciously aware of. So I would say that's a massive part of our mental health journey, is identifying those things and aligning across those lines as it intersect to our blackness, rather than just you're black, I'm black, why don't we do something together? I think that's not a great way to filter people.
This is why I created the game as well, actually. Yes. No, not even to make an ad, but actually that's what I actually meant with it, to find out if there's somebody you can build with this. And I think after playing it, you will know, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
If you know you're aligned or not, whether you have an argument or not.
Someone's answers, it's probably not a great indicator to keep coexisting with them.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it really. I think I have two more. Let's do two more. I'm going to ask you one, actually, and I'm going to actually...
No, be bold. Save your chest. I feel like you're trying to retract on something. Say it, huh?
No, I'm not trying to retract on something. I'm just like, I don't know, being difficult for no reason. Okay, you choose. Choose one. Okay.
What advice would you give your daughter, son, in regards to romantic relationships?
Obviously, my son, it would be probably a bit difficult because I'm not a man, you know?
Okay.
So I think if I had a daughter, it would be about, you know, just realizing that not every man that gives you attention actually likes you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's quite, you know, something in the teenage year, you think somebody gives you attention, you're like, oh, they must really like me. And it's just not the case.
Mm.
You know, I think I would instill this quite simply. Obviously, I would go more in depth and maybe elaborate depending on her age. You know, because obviously if you're reaching 16, 17, 17, we can go a bit more in depth when it comes to the conversation.
16, 17?
Yeah. Okay, maybe.
That's a bit like...
For me, I was a bit late. Yes. Okay, cool. Yeah. So I guess, yeah. But I had talks with my mom when I was 12, I guess. Yeah. But she, I don't know. She thinks she, I think she nurtured a little bit of a, yeah, my mom was quite free with things. So I'm not sure if she did like, no, she did the right thing. Like she never made me feel like I had to be like ashamed of my sexuality of, or, you know, but I think I would teach my daughter like just the mere fact that everybody, every man that gives you attention necessarily likes you, and you should just like take your time and just to really figure out if you, you know, align with someone, or if you really, if you like that person, if you feel safe with that person. That's the most important thing, I guess. And a boy, what would I tell him about romantic relationships? It'd probably be a conversation about consent.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously also to respect your body. And I think sometimes it's like, maybe some people would say it's for men.
Is there a way to have that conversation that's cool enough to engage an actual young person? Because I think my parents said that to me and I didn't understand what the hell.
Respect your body?
Yeah, it sounded like a, it sounded like you're trying to get me not to have fun. But like, obviously now as an adult, I'm like, yeah, please.
Just
but,
show pictures of STDs.
Wow. Like, do you, I don't think that works either.
Probably not, I don't know.
Because in the conversation of STDs is this idea of an immediate cure, so not all of them, but there is some sort of prevention managing way of doing it, so it doesn't give it as, not as big a deterrent as people think. It also doesn't identify pleasure in any of those things, and that's a really important thing. I think if we taught people, young people, pleasure, they would learn to honor it in a way, because it's not pleasurable more than you would if you just scare them with, you can have a baby in STDs. I don't think that's a deterrent. I think when you give them self-interest and say, if you enjoy this, then you can repeat it, they'll be more intentioned about what enjoyment looks like than they would be about what fear feels like. I think people are driven more by passion than they are fear.
So basically you would teach them about pleasure?
Yeah, starting with themselves.
Yeah.
And how to pleasure others. And if you're going to engage in this, it should feel good. It shouldn't just happen because you're curious and you don't have answers and you want to try the thing that everyone else is doing. It's an exercise in pleasure. And then it's like, if I told you something tastes good, you're going to try it more than you are this idea of like, I'm tasting it because it's like, it's too hot. Like, don't touch it, it's too hot. Doesn't deter you.
So you'd be like, touch it.
No, I would say, if you want this brownie, this is what the best brownie in the world should look like. And you would look at it and be like, it doesn't look like that, so it's not worth my time, because it's not worth the actual trying this brownie. If I just say like, don't have brownies because it's too hot and it's bad for you because of sugar, you can be like, I love this brownie. But if I tell you what the best brownie should look and smell like, if it doesn't look and smell like that, your senses will go up and be like, it ain't worth it. I'll wait for the best brownie, I know where to get them from. And also, you can communicate to somebody how to make you the best brownie. I appreciate the metaphor of brownie into sex is different, but we never talk about what is good for you, the reasons to do it, and the context that you should do it in, and be careful of that to make sure that it's actually a pleasurable experience. We just say no and don't because it's scary, because of AIDS and because of STDs.
Positive reinforcement, basically.
It's more than positive reinforcement. It's like appealing to the self-interest of the young person rather than scaring them into not doing something. Because the messaging of sex being cool or interesting or try it is too big.
Yeah, to just be like, don't do it.
Yeah, like everyone's like, yeah, do it. Oh, I just did it with Jane last week. I lost my virginity. You're a virgin? Yeah. And it's just like, well, the first thing is someone that comes to you and says like, oh, I lost my virginity. He's like, did you enjoy it? It was like, you know, it was kind of cool and it hurt a little bit, but like, you know, when I bled and like, that's not.
And did you, so how, what would you teach your daughter about romantic relationships? I
wouldn't necessarily make a big distinction between the two things. I would tell them more about, I teach them the same values. What I'll make them aware of is how they will experience other people in that engagement. So I think my son being more concerned with consent from a gaining it than my daughter commanding it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I'm not saying that they wouldn't do in the inverse,
mm-hmm.
but I think as a young black boy, how you're perceived and what you participate in is really important. And I think even him understanding the concept of pleasure, I was never taught pleasure as a man. It was
demonized.
It was demonized, but yeah. also it was like sex is about the orgasm
mm-hmm.
and it's a goal
mm-hmm.
rather than an experience. So if it's a goal, then as long as I ejaculate, job's done.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the ejaculation and the orgasm are separate. So then it's like, I didn't even know that. So I'm just like, if I ejaculate, I've won. That's my orgasm. I ejaculate, job done, I go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of pleasure is sometimes you may not even ejaculate, but it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like a check-in, like a physical check-in with someone. That's a really dope thing to experience without the goal of having to ejaculate.
And therefore, it's also more about the chemistry you have with the other person.
Yeah,
and that's where I guess the teaching comes in, that you about the cookie.
Yeah.
That it's more about the chemistry and how you feel about the person rather than the end goal of the orgasm.
This is where the pleasure actually comes from. Yeah.
Okay,
you wait for it to be good.
Yes.
Than to just wait for it to happen.
Because the only way it's going to be good if you have that chemistry, really and truly. Otherwise, it's just going to be, and that's what happens a lot. You're just chasing something all the time because you haven't made the time to have that connection.
Yeah. If you haven't had one of those relationships where kissing was just so good and it was just about kissing, just for like a period of time,
mm-hmm.
and the kissing part was explosive for you,
mm-hmm.
it just turned you on. Like, if you haven't had those different ways of engaging with someone and that bringing you to life, you haven't had the thing yet. Like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like the other things can heighten the actual sex. And for the sex to be good, the other things are just like, It's just like you're turning Hobbs on a stove. Like, you turn it all on, then you cook.
Yeah.
And I think so many people are just into cooking, just like making stuff and just putting their dick in people and having sex. And then just like, they're exchanging that for the intimacy, the magic and the spark. So they never really get it, but having the physical penetrative sex is basically the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their way, it's their shortcut into some sort of connection. Whereas like, pleasure is different.
Hmm.
Like, connection, intimacy and pleasure is different. It can look in different ways. And I think once you get into that space, it's a much better experience. That's what I'll be teaching them when that conversation comes. Because I think there's a biological explanation. Then there is a pleasure conversation. And then there is like
intimacy
with somebody else is different. The pleasure with yourself is one phase. But when you're engaging other people is another phase. It's a whole different type of experience.
It's an interesting conversation to have with a teenager or, you know, a young adult.
Mm.
Not a teenager, it's not a young adult, but, you know.
Well, like, I think you have to start it in a different way really early. I don't know if you can get away with holding that conversation to late teens anyway. I think that's just impossible at this era. Like, it's being introduced to your children by the people that they're around, really, from secondary school onwards, if not before. Mm. Like, someone may mention it when you're 10, but you may not understand. By the time you're like 12, 13, you're being introduced to it. People start having this idea of, I've got a girlfriend. And then people are like, oh, have you done this yet? You're surrounded by people who are 15, 16,
you need to get there before the other people get there. It's true.
Well, you need to be close enough to have the conversation when it's introduced to them so that they come to you with it rather than feel like they can't and they have to figure it out on their own.
Mm.
But it's a hypersensitive thing. People hate the idea of sexualizing young people, and of course we don't, from an adult point of view, but they're having those types of conversations amongst themselves with their age mates, so you can't stop that. That's just happening. So are they ready for that, or at least is the door open for them to come and talk to you about it?
That's that's a scary, because I mean, sex is such a like important part of your life, if not actually almost the important part. Not sex per se, but your sexuality is a very big part of adult life. And I think it's so crazy how most households, I mean, I wouldn't say I came from a household like that. I mean, mom-wise, she was quite open with me. But I'm not saying she did the right thing, but at least there was a conversation. But to think that so many of us grew up never having that conversation at all, because it's something that's derogatory, you see? Yeah? That's just crazy. How did we, and it kind of shows, and I'm happy that we are all you know, I'm happy for social media even, and that we're all having these conversations now. But thinking about before, like, probably like 2 out of 10 people had the actual conversation with their parents.
Mm.
And like I said, it kind of shows on how we interact with each other. But yeah, that's it. This one is unnecessary. I think we talked about this before. Yeah, it was just more about childhood trauma. And I think we went through that. Yeah. Not another one.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, thank you so much. I actually learned a lot today.
Good. That was fun. I enjoyed that. That was like, again, some of the questions are simple by nature, but then having to actually find words for it and commit to it, like, makes you really aware of like some of the answers. So even for me, I'm thinking, like, I haven't really thought about things, but you brought it to the front of mind. So it's a great
Dope Black Podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.